We're up to Sif Yud, but there is a major discussion regarding Sif Tes, which last week I left for this week, and it's probably the issue that comes to Rabbanim in Kibbutz Av Ha'Ein more than any other issue, because it has to do with a lot of money. The issue is when a parent leaves a tzava, whether there's an obligation to follow the tzava, or whether a person is allowed to do as he pleases. In Shulchan Aruch, there's no place in Chayshe Mishpat where there's an obligation to listen to a tzava that parents leave. And if somebody does want to compel his children to follow his last will, the only practical way to do it is to use a device called the Shtar Chatzi Zachar. About 10 years ago here in Shul, I pushed it upstairs very much, and I think probably about 50 or 60% of the Shul came to me and we did a Shtar Chatzi Zachar, which takes moments to do, and it's not complicated at all. You do it once, and even if you change your will, it makes it binding. The reason the will is not binding is because there's no kinyan that takes place with a will. When a person says something, he's allowed to change his mind. It's not binding. If I tell you I'm going to give you a gift, or I tell you I'm going to give you a job, or whatever I tell you, just by my saying so, I'm allowed to change my mind the next day. I tell you I'll sell you my house. Now, whatever I tell you, I can change my mind. This is something people don't realize. People call it complaints. You know, he told me, or he promised me, they say, that he'll give me something, or he'll do something for me, or he'll give me a share in the business, he'll give me a gift, he'll pay for my son's wedding, etc., etc. He backed out. Halach is, you're allowed to back out of something you say if you didn't make a kinyan. A kinyan makes things binding, and without a kinyan, you could back out.
It's written and signed. Signature.
A signature is only binding if it's on a shtar kinyan, and it's done in the manner of a shtar kinyan. So it depends. You're talking about a will.
Right.
Let me explain. Give me a second. Please, just give me a minute. Let me finish. A person can back out from something he says without a kinyan. Now, if someone else, if I say something, I leave a will, and I'm saying I want to be makna something now, I still need to do a kinyan. But certainly if I'm saying that after my death, I want my children to give money to my daughter, or I want my children to leave the money to my wife, or I want my children to give money to tzedakah, there's no way you could do a kinyan on that, even if you do a kinyan. What's the kinyan? The kinyan is on something you yourself can't do. Dead people can't give away gifts. So if I tell someone, La'acha Misa, I want such and such to happen, it's not binding in apidine chayshen mishpat. I know what you're going to tell me, just give me a second, you're going to jump. That's the pashtus of what it says in Shulchan Aruch, that it's not binding apidin. Now, there are two tshuvas, one in the Achiezer, and one in the Igros Moshe, which mention, at least Nigris Maisha mentioned incidentally, that children have to follow the parents' will, but it's not clear exactly what Ramesha was referring to. Ramesha is saying something not like the Shulchan Aruch. And it's, like I said, it's not the primary topic of the tshuva. So it's a little mysterious what exactly Ramesha meant. But Apidine Chayshin Mishpat, a muzik can say, I'm not obligated to do it. The first time this came up to me, and this precipitated my push here in the shul for people to do a Shtar Chatzi Zachar, was an incident. A good friend of mine is a Rav somewhere else, called me for help. A person had passed away, had left one son and a number of daughters. His will instructed the children to divide everything equally. And the one son was insisting on keeping the whole Yerusha, apidine chayshin mishpat. And when he was told that it's certainly the right thing to do, the good thing to do, he responded, There are a lot of things in Yiddishkeit that are good to do. So I'll do something else. I'll do Chol of Yisrael, he mentioned. And Mekabel Chol of Yisrael, it's also a good thing to do. Why do I have to pick the Chumrah, the Hiddur Mitzvah that cost me $1 million? I remember it involved an apartment house in Borough Park. It was one of the items of Yerusha. You know, you're talking about big money. And, you know, he insisted that, you know, he's not a Ganev. He's not a Ganev. He wants to do whatever his Alpi did. So this is Alpi Chayshu Mishpat. The question we're going to deal with today is Mitzad Kibur Ave'ein. We have here in Siftes, there's a Chayiv L'chavda Yafila Acha Maisai. There's a Chayiv to give Kavid La'acha Misa. So the question now is, we had in Sif Aleph, Ein Bezdin Kaifin on Mitzvah Kibur Ave'ein. It's not going to help. Bezdin can't force Kibur Ave'ein. Nevertheless, if I'm talking to someone, he's telling me, he's not interested in Hidurim, the Hidur will do in the Chol of Yisrael. And I could afford, you know, any Chol of Yisrael he wants. But he doesn't want to do Hidurim. Is it possible for me to tell him that it's a chiyuv d'oraisa al kibur ave'ein? That's the question. Now Bezdin can't force it. Bezdin can't compel it. The question, because kibur ave'ein ain't kaifin. But still, if it's a firm yid, I tell him it's a mitzvah d'oraisa. Possibly he'll listen. Yeah. All right. So there's a sugya in the Gemara of mitzvah l'shmaya divrei hames. That's a mitzvah to listen to the tzava of a mace. We pass in like Tysus. Tysus says that's only if it's money biyat shalish. If it's money held by a third party, which means that let's say someone has money in the bank and he designated a beneficiary to the bank. So that's called mamon biyat shalish, money in the hands of a third party. And then we do say that mitzvah l'shmaya divrei hames, that the in Bezdin, the son could not take that money. Once it was given to a third party to hold, and the third party was told, La Chamisa, give it to such and such, that becomes a binding, Al Pishtira de Chayshemish, but a binding command. And even if it's not a Shkiv Meira, even if he did it early, that's buying. That's good for Mami Biyat Sholish, which has to do with bank accounts. And it helps. It helps. It would help. Well, the trust is a little complicated, but because the trust is really a form of corporation. It's not. If the trust was an irrevocable trust, where the parents can't have no control over it, then it would be Mami Biyat Sholish. If it's a trust, well, it doesn't matter. They're only trustees, the designees. The problem with the trust is always that a typical trust doesn't say divided evenly among all of the beneficiaries. It leaves the trustees to use their own discretion. Sometimes one child is wealthy and one child is not wealthy. So it usually leaves it to the discretion of the trustees. And there are instructions. And the instructions are clear, then it's good. I have a few situations where I'm a trustee on things. And in all cases, I told the individual involved, put it on a piece of paper, write your instructions to me. Especially with older people, they say one thing, then they call you and they say something else, and then they think of a third thing, and sometimes it's contradictory. You know, they say, give everyone evenly, but, you know, and there are contradictions. So if you're ever a trustee for something, even from a parent or a parent-in-law, ask for written instructions on how to do it. And that's really the best way to go. If it's a trust which is revocable, then it's still in the parent's control. And then I'm not sure, it's very unclear how the halacha would look at it. Okay, yes.
Just for a second, you said that if one person is Muslim, if his father is still alive, then the
mother
of the child should make a difference.
The mother is alive? But the mother is not a Yairish. Who's alive?
The bond
is alive.
The bond?
The father's alive.
And the Shasti Rossi said the Muslim, one of them is not Muslim.
No. I said if it's Biyad Sholish, then there's a halacha. Oh, what I said is this, that even though they're Gris Maisha, Ram Chaim Meiser, both mention that you have to listen, which whoever brings them writes, I wish they would explain what they mean. But typically, a person is not a muzik, it's the son who's the muzik and not the others. You're saying that if the daughter is typhus, she could say kimli like the Igris Maish and the Chayav Chayim Aizen. You may be right.
Is it
called Kol Dolim? No. So the son is it's not called Dolim because it's not Munach Berisha Sarabim.
So what good is muzik if the Shant of Adu is it to resolve?
Because there's a rule of kimli. If Louis Yitzur, somebody would have a muzik, it's a box of cash or it's a diamond ring, and someone's a muzik in it, let's say the daughter is a muzik, she could say kimli like the Igris Maish or Chayim Aizen. Yeah, but I think at least in the yeshiva world, Chaim Aizen and Igris Maish is enough to say kimli. Maybe the Siddusha world, not. I want to get to Kibbut Aveim. Yeah. Again, all right, let me explain the Yerusha part. I want to explain. If you have a will, and what I recommend everyone do in a will is leave things evenly. You want to give one child more than another, do it b'chayim. Don't do it. It's always better to do it b'chayim in Allah Hamisa. But putting my advice aside, the halacha, if you let me finish. If you're leaving a will and you want the will to be binding, then you should write a shtar chatzi zachar. Shtar chatzi zachar is a one-page shtar. It's not a newfangled invention. It comes, the Rambam calls it the shtar of the Chachmei Svarad. That in Spain, this the Rambam refers to as being an old way of doing things, probably goes back 1,000 years. What's a shtar of Chatzi Zachar and what does Chatzi Zachar mean? Chatzi Zachar is just a name. In the time of the Rambam, the custom was to give the daughters a 50% share and the sons 100% share. That was the custom. So it got a name, shtar chatzi zachar. However, the shtar doesn't say that. Let me finish. The shtar doesn't say, no, a share, if there's a share, if there are 10 children, the share is 10%. Right? A 50% share and 100% share. So what I'm saying is, what a shtar chatzi zachar is, it's a one-page document. And it says the following. Now listen carefully to Chap, what was done. A man wants to leave Yerusha. Here I am. I have one daughter and have seven sons, Baruch Hashem, and I want to give everyone equally. If they go to Beis Din, the truth is six of my sons won't gain anything. If they go to Beis Din, my Bechor will get Pishnayim, and my six sons will get a Chelik. They follow my instructions. The six sons will get the same Chelik. My Bechor will have to give one of his Pishnayim to my daughter. So it evens out, except for the two of them. But whatever, forgetting my personal situation. Let's say I want to do it. I could do a kinyan today, but it's not going to work. I could do a kinyan today, giving the money to them. But first of all, then it's not, I don't have the money. It's not my money. I did a kinyan. I gave it away. And second of all, I'm still planning to make millions of dollars in my lifetime. And a kinyan today doesn't help for tomorrow or the next day. So you know what's going to be. So therefore, you do a shtar chatzi zachar. The way a shtar chatzi zachar works is the following. You go to a rav, and you create a chayiv. You estimate your Yerusha will be, pick a number. It doesn't have to even be realistic. It just has to be more than what you'll actually leave. So you pick $5 million. So let's say Yerusha will be $5 million. You go to a rav, and you do a kinyan. You create a chayiv, payable achar misa, to someone, who that someone is not the issue. You create to Mr. A, Pliny, you create a chayv of $5 million, b'tanai. B'tanai is, if the children follow your last will, then the tanai is batal. Then you don't owe anybody anything, and they'll follow the will. If your children decide not to follow your will, they want to insist on din Torah, then the chayv is chal. And then there's no Yerusha. All the Yerusha money goes to Mr. Pliny. And then there's no Yerusha. So the question is, so in this way the children gain nothing by trying to insist on following Dine Torah. Now the beauty of it is, you don't have to write what your will is. Write one will today, change it in 10 years, change it in 20 years. The same one-time shtar is good, because the shtar creates a chayv, payable achar misa, only if your last will is not followed. So since you, I have it on the computer over here, yeah, sure. The now, this ishtachetzach is used by all the batei dinim. Any bezdin has its own document, its own version. It's all basically the same thing. Now, you're going to tell me, people come to me, I say, create a chayv to someone. To who? Why don't I create a chayv? Well, if you have one daughter, you can leave it to your daughter. In theory, though, your daughter can connive with one of the sons to challenge it. She gets all the money, or she gives the son part of it. In theory, that could happen. The best thing is, don't laugh, is to leave it to the Rav. That's what I say. Leave it to the Rav. Now, what's good about it? What's very good about it, the best thing about leaving it to the Rav, is you don't understand. What's a shtar chatzi zachar? A man dies. It goes to court. Court divides according to his Yerusha. What are you afraid? So one of the children is going to go to Bezdin. As soon as Bezdin sees the shtar chatzi zachar, they're not going to patchka with him. As soon as the shtar chatzi zachar, they don't patchka with somebody who comes to Bezdin, and the only way he can benefit is there's some type of a conspiracy to cheat others. Well, you know, under the table, because Bezdin's not going to do it. It never comes to Bezdin. Once there's a shtar chatzi zachar, the Bezdin says, just go through it in court. The Rav never makes a penny from all of this stuff. And it doesn't happen. I've already had people die who left me with a shtar chatzi zachar, left me plenty of money, and never got a penny. I don't even know what happened exactly, but that's just the way it is. Now, before I take questions, one more point. When there's a wife that survives, what's the din Torah legabi the wife? The tzavah leaves the money to the wife. But typically, very often, somebody who does the right estate planning and has enough of a estate to need the planning leaves the minimum, I don't know what the minimum is now, what is it, $1.1 million? Huh? The minimum is an exclusion from estate taxes. The exclusion, what? It's $5 million. But it's all federal, yeah. But so, all right, $5 million went up a lot. I mean, it was $600,000 for many years till Reagan. Reagan accelerated it, and Bush, it was supposed to disappear totally. And then they rushed something through Congress. The very often in the estate, there's a minimum distribution that escapes estate taxes. So very often that's left to the children, and the rest is left to the mother. If you create a trust, there's no reason to do it. And things are left to the wife, to the surviving spouse. Didn't Torah, what is a spouse? A spouse doesn't yarshin. However, didn't Torah, a spouse is entitled to a ksuba. Now people say, ksuba, oh, that's 200 zuz. How much is a zuz? 192 prutis, right? A dinner, a zuz, same thing. 192 prutis, about $2. 200 zuz, $400. I could afford that. Give up $400. That's not the ksuba. The ksuba, it gives a woman, a surviving spouse, a right to live in the home, the joint home that they lived in, and to live in the same lifestyle she had the chayeha from the estate until she goes out to remarry. Until the day she remarries, but to the day she sort of makes a decision to remarry, to fully nasi, to the exact point. But a surviving spouse is entitled to live off the estate, unless she demands a ksuba. She demands the 200 zuz, then she can't live off the estate. It's a choice. So a smart woman, not to demand a ksuba, she rather lives off the estate. That's why she's entitled to abidinei Torah. As a practical matter, the spouse gets the lives off, except what they decided to give to the children. Now, this is all, everything I've spoken about till now is chayshu mishpat. I want to get to Kibbut Av Ve'eim in a minute, and I'll take questions about the Chayesh Mishpat aspect. Yes?
Why don't you say Shah
Misa? It needs a Kinyan. If you do a Kinyan, if someone has the presence of mind, Shah Kaidem Misa, to give a Matana, it's fine. It's fine if he does it.
But don't get better, because you're not going to have it.
It's Chal now. It's Chal right now. He gives a Matana. Give me a Matana. No, only on the money that exists.
Oh, okay.
He's not going to make more money in the shah.
Better, because then he's not going to have anything.
If he gets better, he could do a new kinyan shah, kaidim his next misa.
No, he gave it all away now.
Oh, he gave it all away. Yeah, that's the downside. If you give it all away, you don't have it.
He gave him much money now.
Yeah, if he gives it away, shah, kaidim his misa, he better be sure he's going to die. Because otherwise he gets up and he's a pauper. You have to speak up, I'm sorry. No, only a kinyan can only be on what he presently owns. The beauty of Shtarat HaZakah is that works for everything. Yeah, it's not a kinyan; it just creates a chayv. I create a chayv more money than I owe. It's still a chayv. I just don't have the money to pay it. If I make money later, then. No, the question was, if you do a kinyan gomor,
No,
the kinyan has to be now. You can't do a kinyan on davar shalava lailam. You can't do a kinyan on money that you don't have.
So could you do a kinyan on the money that is now, that's chal 20 years from now, or whenever I die?
If you do a kinyan, that should be chal later.
How
does Shemitah
affect this obligation?
How does Shemitah affect... It's a very interesting question. It's a sugya in Makis, right? If you make a chayv, that should be chal be'eser shanim. It's not chal now. It's like kerminin by it. It's not. It doesn't come to the darga of tviyah. There's no layigais. No, it's not a present chayv. It can't be tviyah today. Right? It has to be layigais that you come on an eye now. If you came on an eye now anyway, then it's not mishamim. Yeah. I think so. If the person you wrote to Yerusha to and the chayv dies, it's like any other chayv that I guess his children would yarshin.
What if he has no children? What if he has no
Yerusha? There's always Yerusha. Shem lecha Yisrael, shem le Yairish. Right? There's no Yisrael, there's never Yairish. A ger shem le Yikraivim would be the only problem. Everyone has a Yairish, even we can't identify him.
Something
about
Shtag, Chas Yisrael. And it will.
Can the children contest the will in court? For that, you need a good lawyer to write a proper will. Wills are documents that are standard. Standard documents, you're typically not successful in challenging a court unless you contend that the person signing the will was not of sound mind, which is a good argument with many people. But it doesn't really work unless the will was signed, 2 days before Misa and the parent was elderly and frail.
So
we're going to learn in a minute that Kibbut Aveim, you have to listen even to the will. Anyway, just in Bezi, it can be Kaif on Kibbut Aveim. Okay, so the question Rabbi Yeshua is asking is, let's say you write such a will and you put the $5 million chayv to the Rav. Is there any way to force the Rav to distribute it properly if it would end up in the hands of the Rav, which I'm saying would never happen? I suppose there is a way to do it. I mean, if he's willing to make a shavua, he would be bound by it. Or I guess he could make kinyanim to... It's possible. It's possible. He himself can make a shtar chatzi zachar. He himself can make a shtar, creating a chayv back to someone else if he doesn't follow the instructions of the Ma'irish. With a kinyan. I can create a chayv. I owe you nothing. And I say, let's do a kinyan chalip, and you give me a shtar, and I obligate myself to give you $1 million. That creates a chayv. That I can create a chayv.
Even though it's only one side.
I'm getting the sudr. I'm getting the chayv, so I'm getting something in the mask. I can't predict, but the dinim that have integrity follow the rule that anytime you say status izu, you don't follow the letter of the law. Anytime you smell that there's an under the table conspiracy, Bezdin is al pidin, doesn't follow through. So if you have here a Yerusha, and let's say there are 5 boys and 1 girl, and one of the boys is contesting it, and he's just going to lose everything. So Bezdin suspects that there's some deal between him and the girl, and Bezdin won't deal with it. Yeah.
What about the situation today where a lot of people divest their assets as they get older because they want to avoid taxes, they want to have Medicaid, whatever it might be. So
Okay, if someone gives out his money, he puts in the name of his children, either because he wants to be eligible for medical benefits or to escape estate taxes. So first I have to tell you that I don't recommend that people do such a thing. It's not good to be totally bedas habanim. It's a very, very tricky thing to do. You put in a trust, even a trust with a proper trustee. But to give it out straight, I don't think a person should. However, if a person does, if a person takes $100,000, he tells his son, I don't want it in my name, I want it in your name, but it's my money. In halacha, that's a pekudin. Even though in law, the judge doesn't care. You know, people say you're cheating the government. You know, you're putting all your name, you're evading taxes. It's legal. It's perfectly legal to evade taxes by putting your money in your children's name. You have to follow the rules, whatever the rules are. There's a certain maximum distribution you can make every year that's tax-free. But it's typically done. There's nothing legally wrong with it. But the law in the United States is you have to follow the letter of the law, not the spirit of the law. That's what the law is. When Congress passes a law to compel, estate taxes, the first thing lawyers do, and that's their job, is they take a magnifying glass, they go through the letter of the law, they find a loophole, and they exploit the loophole. And they're not hiding it from the courts. No. It's perfectly legal.
Now, to avoid taxes, it's usher to evade it. Evading
is violating. So evade is the wrong word. But to avoid taxes by doing it, there's nothing illegal about it. There's no spirit of the law that requires Americans to try to give Uncle Sam as much money as possible. There's no such thing. Typically, the only people that pay taxes are the middle-class people. Wealthy people know they have a problem and plan properly. Poor people don't have what to give Uncle Sam. The middle, people come to me. They say, $1 million. I don't have $1 million. I tell them, how much is your house worth? You have a house in Flatbush with no mortgage anymore. How much is it worth? And then you start telling them, I don't have anything, especially elder people. I have nothing. I start, how much is your worth, your total worth? I tell them, how much money do you have in the bank? How much do you have in stocks? How much is your IRA? So you start adding it up. And suddenly you're sitting there with them and you tell them, well, your estate is worth $4 million. They say, me? $4 million? I'm not a millionaire, It's just the numbers add up. And I don't know what they're not telling me. So you should know. Gemara says, amazing halacha. It says, if kaidem misa, a person tells his son, the money in my drawer is not my money. It's someone else's money. And he dies. The child doesn't have to accept that.
A person, nobody wants to make himself seem rich. Nobody wants, except for poor people who pretend they're rich. But people who are rich, they're not looking to make themselves sound rich. So
my point is that it's perfectly legal to avoid paying taxes by following whatever the law is in the country. And there's plenty of room to do it. There are estate planners, and they're worth their money. And if they're coming up with innovative things, be suspicious of them. Your standard ways of avoiding tax issues, and everybody should do it. I don't know that the federal exclusion is $5 million. At least some people are excluded from it. So machlekes rishayim, if giving a pekud needs a kinyan, or it's enough that you give it to him, you walk away. In the case of money in a bank, it's a kinyan stumta, because when you put money by law in somebody else's name, it's a kinyan apidina de machusa, and that's called a kinyan stumta, which Shulchan Aruch recognizes. So it's adequate. But it remains a pekadin because of the spoken agreement between them.
So by transferring the money over to the children, for example, or the house, for example. Also?
Yeah, if you give it to a third party with instructions, give it to the children, that's already, then it's a pekudin to the children with instructions on how to divide it. Is that called biat sholish when it's in their own hands? I'm not sure. I have to look at Shulchan Aruch.
You know, if it's if you know, if you're giving it to them, well, if you give it to them, the way you give it to them is the instructions.
If you give one child the house, which is worth the most, and another child,
not a good idea. Not a good idea.
Not a good idea. Now, yeah.
If you made a plate to the child, you have to make a plate to the child that even though I'm putting it in your name, I don't mean for you to yarshin it, I mean for it to go equally to everybody. Yeah. If you instruct him, then that's beyond childish. Yeah.
Well, firstly, you need a kid for that as well. You make a plate to the child. That it's only
well, if you legally transfer it to his name, that's a kinyan al pidin. I think it's a kinyan. You don't need the court. The court follows your will even without the shtar chatzi zachar. The court doesn't care if shtar chatzi zachar. They follow the will anyway. I put witnesses that most shtarists don't have. I just put witnesses on bottom just in case later they'll challenge that it's fraud, it's fraudulent. So I always put witnesses.
If someone does the shtar chatzi zachar, an older brother, but someone who's never before the estate,
it goes to his yarshim.
It goes to the
Rav's yarshim. Peasant has no choice. You know something? The son doesn't have to go to Peasant. If the son has power to hold it, he can hold it up.
In this case, which your brought you, was any resolution that was. You know what happened?
Last I heard, I can tell you, I don't know if he wants me to tell you who he is. He's a Rav, a known Rav. And he was trying to make a pshara, you know, he should give something. Yeah. So his offerings were very, you know, to offer $10,000 to someone is nice, but when Yerusha is the seven figures, it didn't quite do the trick. So I don't know what ended up happening. You know, I spoke to the person, I knew him a little, so I spoke to him once, and I wasn't, to my knowledge, I wasn't successful. I don't know what the end was. If it's actually transferred to Sholish, it could be an organization. It could be anybody who has control over it. That's good. You could, but it won't. I mean, to create a chayv to the children. You mean just leave a $5 million chayv divisible by all children equally. Seems to be a best date, so what you're saying seems to make sense. Just leave a chayv to all the children equally.
Then you have to know how much money you're going to have.
You just do a number bigger than what you'll have. Do a 10 million. If you think about 5 million, so leave a chayv for 10 million to all the children equally. As long as they're all equal, they all have. It's one chayv, all simultaneous. The truth is, it's not 100% so. The halacha is, even though people are used to from the Gemara, that shibudim go to the first one first, that's only karka. If someone owes me money and I grab cash or diamonds, then any bal chayv could grab. Yeah, then it'll be a problem.
I think it should be clear that the shtar chatzi zakar should not be in the will itself. It should be a separate document.
Should be a separate document for many reasons. Not if you have a shtar chatzi zakar. That's what I'm talking about for the last half hour. That's what I'm talking about.
Rabbi, what does stumta mean?
Stumta. What does stumta mean? Stumta is a Gemara, I think, in the end of Azov. It talks about a certain signet on a keli, which was a kinyan in that medina. So it got the phrase, stumta is probably a Babylonian Aramaic word, it just is used as a phrase for any kinyan that's derech ha-seichrim to do, a handshake in certain places, that's derech ha-seichrim to do, or derech ha-medina to do. Alright. You could, but there's no reason to. Unless there's more money later, then you can write a later one.
No, I mean, let's say the person you write a book to,
No, we'd go to the Arshim, you know, of the deceased person. Like any chayv. Okay, let us. I have to tell you, I had a very nice experience. There was somebody, I wasn't close to the nifter, I was close to his children,
He had two sons, a Bukhar and a Pashut, two sons, and he died without doing any Shtar Chatzi Zachar or anything. The Bukhar is in Chinuch. The second son is a very wealthy person. He's not a Chinuch, obviously. He's a very wealthy person, independent of his parents. His father left approximately a $2 million Yerusha, and the son, who's the Mechanech, called me, and he said he doesn't know how to bring this up to his brother, but he would like Pishnayim. He really would like Pishnayim. His brother is a millionaire a couple times over, and he, you know, he struggles. And Alpi Din Torah is entitled to Pishnayim, and he would like it, and he doesn't want to make a machloikus over it, but if I can somehow facilitate it, you know, it would be nice. Very touchy topic. Very, very touchy topic. So I spoke to the brother. And I want to tell you, the brother said to me, I want him to get Pishnayim. I want him to get Pishnayim. He didn't tell you guys Pishnayim. I want him to get Pishnayim. And he was 100%, it was a beautiful thing, 100% behind it. Once he told me that, I told him, it's not going to cost you as much as you think. Is halacha that a bechar takes pishnayim only b'murzik and not b'roi. What that means is a bechar only gets pishnayim in real property that the person who died had. If a person had money invested, or money loaned, or money in the bank, there's no din of pishnayim because pishnayim is b'murzik v'loi b'roi. So that this person who died, half of his estate was his house here in Flatbush. $1 million, and that went pishnayim to the bechar, and one chelik to the pashut, but the rest of his money, which was either in stocks or in the bank accounts or IRAs, all that money was roi, and that up he didn't tell you, they divided evenly. So it's roi means he didn't have it. Money in the bank, there's a tshuva from Rabbi Yashiv. The money in the bank is roi. The bank is not obligated to hold your cash. The bank is understood, the bank had invested. The bank was obligated to hold 10%. I think after the crash, they changed it to 20%. But they're obligated to hold 10%. They don't have to hold 10% of your money. They have to hold 10% of the total deposits, the liquid. And even what's liquid is very often right.
Money is gone.
In England, I think there's a whole that their
civil law makes a bank deposit to be like a wound called. It's a marshal.
Okay. At any rate, what?
The fact that it's insured doesn't make it look
good. Insured? No. Insurance is not mosaic. Insurance money. But it's right. So if I have a loan to someone that I can, it's payable upon demand. It's still right. I have a loan to someone, it's still right. The house is mukhzik. You don't have to sell the house. You can yarshin the house. You don't have to yarshin the money that the house is sold for. Yarshin the goof of the house.
Yarshin. They have a right not to give you the money. They have a right to hold on to the money for a certain amount of time.
Whether that's so or not, I don't.
They have the right to hold your money.
Okay, it's a raya. What?
You could also change the name of the yarshin
the stock. A stock is not, my understanding is a stock is right. It's not mulzik. If you're a partner in an existing business in the traditional sense, you're a mulzik. We'll talk about stocks once. Stocks is not, I don't think is real. I don't think it's a mulzik. But okay. All right. Now let's start learning Hilchis Kibbur Av Eim. Okay, till now we spoke about Chayshe Mishpat. What about Dine Kibbur Av Eim? Everyone turns to Tshuvas Rebbe Akiva Egerson and Samaches. He deals with a different shaila in the beginning, but he gets to, and it's just written beautifully, like butter, you can read it. B'guf hadin, in tzivsa ima yayav evlasis dover achrei maisai, tzarech l'chai kayim atzavah medin kibud, dovezeh tzarech iyan ladina. So he declares, if a tzavah of the parent is obligated. Now listen to the lumdis that he goes through. He says we find what seems to be a stira in Shas. Listen to the stira. Mitzinu perakam the kedushin daf lamed aleph. Mechabdei b'chay, mechabdei b'maisai. That's the sif test that we learned last week. Mechabdei b'maisai. Kibbur av eim is even after a person dies. Mitzinu lehepach. The perikud basic service. It says you're obligated to give honor to your older brother. We paskin that why do you have to give kibbut to your older brother of kibbut av? Because it's a chelik in kibbut av. She is bazul to all they say him. They mistar him as a harbe. It's a part of kibbut av to give honor to your older brother. And the Gemara says that when the father dies, there's no longer a mitzvah to give kavod to your older brother. So that's mashma, the la'achar misa. There is no kibbut av. So b'kiveger is a stira in shas. In Kedushin, it says mechavdei b'maisai. And in Ksubis, it says kibbut ends la'achar misa. So b'kiveger answers. He says there's a difference between kavod, which gives honor to their name. For example, in Siftes, you say Abba Mairi. You give honor to his name, and that exists even after he dies, as opposed to something which is a nachas ruach la'aviv, kugay machila u'mashkeyu, something that just gives him agnes nefesh, takes away his nachas ruach if you don't listen, that doesn't exist la'achar misa. See, there are things that give him a pleasure, he feels good in this world, that doesn't exist la'achar misa. And then there are things which give honor to his name, and that continues la'achar misa. Now, based on this teretz, he clears l'inyan kiyum tzavos aviv. He clears if guf inyan hashmas kalav v'ima hu kamei nachas ruach, and then it doesn't exist la'achar misa. Or he says maybe not. Maybe it's a covet for the father to that his tzavos followed. I would think so. If he declares, he says, Niruli Ladina, Bemitzava Labada of Derech Tzava, Lite Maman Yerushasim Laplani Kafakach, the father leaves a will, the Tzrichin Lakayim Adin Kibarav. His psak is that you have to give, you have to follow the Tzava of Kibarav, Umadishoklu Vitaru, Bemitzal Kayim Divrei Ames, and this which we find declared by Mitzal Kayim Ames, Du Rak Bemashlish, Mitzilalakach, I told you a few minutes ago. Mitzvah Kayim Divrei Ames is only if you gave it to a third party. What about Kibbut Aveim? So he says, Hainu B'loshin Tenu, Dav Loshin Matana, Gam Nafkaminim Mitzvah La'achem Mishar Yoshim Loshayati Kibbut Av. He says, there are a few Nafkaminas. If the Yorish is not a son, it's not Mechoyiv in Kibbut Av. Gam Mitzvah L'bon of Nafkamina, De Mishum Kibbut Av Le'kathina Le. At Kibbut Av, Bezin doesn't force. Alts mitzava biyad sholish bezdin forces. So this is his maskana. He says that alts kibbut aveim yomuchoyev to give. Then he says, 1 minute. We had a rule last week that kibbut aveim is only Michel Av, not Michel Ben. Alts kibbut aveim, you're not muchoyev to spend money. You're only muchoyev to do what the father, what the from the father's money. So he says, Ulam Bathakfe Kamechi Bezeh. Yeshlaim Akiva and Diyarshu Hamamin have a mom Shalem. And a Luchoyev Chayim Tzavos Aviyam, the Kaim Lon Kibbut Av Mishalav. So he says, Makomok Yeshlaim Dafka Hosam, it's only Mishalav. Over here, he says somewhat, leaves it hanging to what the idea is, that this is. Since this money comes from the father to the children, that's really called Mishel Av. There's any Baruch Kachi, he goes into it. So there are three parts of the tshuva. He clears his chakira, lacha moisai, what you're obligated in. He says, psak, that you mechuyev al kibbut aveim. And then he says that, you could tie this Mishel Ben, so they are terutz. So this is the bottom line, this Rabbi Akiva Eiger. The very least, Rabbi Chaim Eisen and Ramosha are accepting this lahalacha. And therefore, as a practical matter, a person's mechuyev, a chiyev d'iraisa, really, to listen to Tzav HaSavit. When you learn Sif Aleph, Bezin Nachkoif on Kibbut Aveim, you learned it like I learned it. Not much negeya today. Bezin's not forcing Kibbut Aveim, Bezin doesn't force anything. It is negeya. Because if Bezin would be Koif on Kibbut Aveim, you could go to Bezin. And Bezin will force the tzava. But since Bezin is not kaif on kibbut,
And since if someone leaves a typical will without taking care of it, alpidin, it's not more than kibbut aveim. Kibbut aveim is a deraisi, we have to listen. But it's just that, it's kibbut aveim, bezin is not kaifa. So therefore, if somebody goes alpidin, the bechar can get pishnayim, and the boys could exclude the daughters from the Yerusha, and therefore everybody really should have a shtar chatzi zachar. So this is this topic, which we spent the better part of the hour on, but it's probably, like I say, the most common kibbut aveim shaila that comes up. And I should add, very often in their elder years, an elderly parent lives at the home of or the neighborhood of one sibling and not the other. And it creates tremendous animosity. The sibling who took care of the parent, who very often really put the whole life on hold for a number of years to have the parent live in the house and run to the doctor, and that child feels entitled to a greater part of the Yerusha, feels entitled to more. The other siblings don't. They say, you lived in the city, I live in Eretz Yisrael, what can I do? And it creates tremendous animosity. The parents have to have the chachma ahead of time, b'chayehem, to give away without telling, Yishan Adam Leben Bein Abanim, Namachuyiv, to tell the children what you give the other children, but to give away whatever they feel that this child's entitled to, and to make it clear that whatever falls into Yerusha should be divided among the children equally. That's the healthiest way to go. Poor people don't have the problem of children getting into fights over Yerusha. Only wealthy people have. There's one person who says very often, he knows someone who was working in his late 70s, and people ask him, why are you working in your late 70s? Go to Florida. He said he wants to leave Yerusha for his children. And his children ended up in a fight in court, not talking to each other, and this is why he worked into his old age, to leave Yerusha. So a smart person should try to take care of it. If a child feels entitled to more, give more. It happens sometimes one child does come into the business, one doesn't come into the business. It's very, very difficult. A person shouldn't let children know what you gave the other child. Give each child whatever you want to give. And whatever remains in the Yerusha should be divided equally. If someone is a second of a spouse to pass away, he really ideally should take care of it well. When you have a surviving spouse, you don't want to give away your money. You want to leave it to the spouse. But otherwise, a person should do it b'chachma. And if you have money in an account somewhere, create beneficiary documents that don't really leave room for anybody to fight over it. And a chachma ain't a b'raisha. Okay, let's move on.
The case with you, with the rov. See, my seat was always the b'raisha.
He was over quite a kivag. He's over a derasi kibbut aveim. Question is if that's enough to convince him. It depends on his attitude.
The Rav taught us in the name of Yaakov that a person is allowed to say lashon hara that makes. Does that exclude parents? You shouldn't do that, or is that
I had mentioned the Rav Yaakov writes in Parshas Vayeshev. I mentioned this in the Navi Shir more than 10 years ago, I think, that the coolest people remember. Rabbi Yaakov writes in Parshas Vayeshev, if he's a rabbi from Shulchan Aruch, there's no issa lashon hara on people that are not alive. The Shulchan Aruch said there's a cheirim on moitzi shem ra, on a lie, on people that are not alive. Rabbi Yaakov says there's no issa lashon hara on people that are not alive. That would answer why the Gemara says what seems to be lashon hara about certain great people. It tells you the failing of certain. I'm not going to tell you who I speak lashon hara, but the story about Ramea's halakha wife. It's not a nice story, and the Gemara brings such stories about people, or Elazar ben Arach, who couldn't read Hachodesh as Elohim. These are all lashon hara about people. With the Gemara doesn't say Pliny. So when I gave the shir, I mentioned people answer the Gemara says l'tayelas. I'm warning you then. If you learn that Gemara, and you don't take the musa tayelas from it, that means you learn issa deraisa. If you say that's a teretz, the Gemara might have been telling it l'tayelas, but the shemeya has to be shemeya l'tayelas. So if someone's telling it just as inciting Gemara, so you have a big problem.
So Reb Yaakov says this chiddush. He says that the Torah can write all these terrible things about the Shvatim because there's no iser lachamisa. There's no iser of lashon hara lachamisa. The question was this: does that apply to parents? There's mechabdei b'maisa. Of course it does. Right? You have to call him Abba Mori. You can't say Abba Mori Russia. You know, you can't say. You have to say. Therefore, what? What's that show? I know, I always don't pass him from stories, and I don't remember that last part is printed, that he died from it. That's not printed. I don't think so. I think the story is there. I don't think it says that part. I don't pass him from stories. You know, I know about stories firsthand that they're typically exaggerated, and I remember once I told someone a certain mice happened with Rav Palm. I wanted to print it. He's grabbed a straight person. He sent me a copy. I said, why are you writing? It was pouring. It wasn't pouring. You know, why are you writing? Like, he embellished it very much. And makes it, first of all, less believable. And second of all, you can't paskin anything from stories. No. Gemara says, Yerushalmi says that you don't paskin lo mitech halacha, lo mitech maisa, lo mitech halacha lo maisa. It's such a... I think it's Yerushalmi Tosis brings himself. Had to be a halacha l'maisa thing. From a maisa, you have to ask. From a halacha, you have to know if you meant it l'maisa. Yeah, I want to do a list of mistakes I made.
You don't know that person. No one really knows who that person is.
There's a reason there because
it's almost like a Shvatim and Nafesh.
2,000 years of building.
I mean, the Shvatim, you only know them by name. Do we really know anybody? All right, let's learn at least one sif in Hilchas Kibbud Av Vaim. Sif Yud. What? It's a Mishnah in Yevamis, in Bava Basra, in Yesh Naichlin. The Mishnah says you definitely could do it. The question is not advisable. But I'll add one nekuda. It appears that there is an inyan, whatever an inyan means, there's an inyan to leave a nachla for Yerushal Pidin Taira. There is, whether it's a Mrs. Hasei, or whether it's a tikkun for the neshama, there's some inyan to do a pishnayim. And what I tell people who ask me for help, I tell them, take one bond or one thing, put it in an envelope, and write on the outside of the envelope, I'd like this to be divided up Yerusha din Taira, exclusive of everything else, and hopefully the children will listen to him and they'll do it. What?
A bond is
a bad example. Take a diamond and put it in an envelope. But take something of value. A check in the United States is nothing more than a request. What? Cash is mozik. Someone's mozik in Bezdin and cash, we always call them the mozik. Okay. All right, Sifyud. There's one son and girls. You leave that to the son, right? Should be up, he didn't tire, and should be left to the son. Yeah. One son, it's easy. You give it to him to put in his drawer, and Yashim will laugh at me. It'd be the same thing if you left everything to the wife.
If
you want to leave everything to the wife, the Shtachat Zizacha works for that. As well, all the children don't lose much by letting the chayiv be chal. You know what I mean? Because if they're getting something, so by challenging it, they lose what they're supposed to get. If they don't challenge it, they get what they get. If everything's to the wife, then in theory they could challenge it. In practice, like I said, it doesn't work that way. Sif Yud.
Misha nitrifa das aviva imai. Mishtada linege mam kifidaitam. That is, comes up. People in their older years, layalenu, become either senile or very demanding. Misha nitrifa das aviva imai. Mishtada linege mam kifidaitam. Ad sheyeruchem aleihem. I think that means until they get better. You have to try to listen to them with their mishagasin as best you can. V'im, always. V'im yev shalamai v'pnei shenishtanu. Now here I think it's a mistake. It's v'im shenishtatu. If they became a shaita, we'll see. I'll talk about it in a minute. B'yaiser. Yelech loy. You shall leave them. V'yanichem. V'yitzav alachem l'inay karoi. If it becomes impossible, this is the Gemara with Rav Ami, whose mother became impossible. We'll talk about what impossible involves. He moved to Eretz Yisrael. He said he can't possibly be mechabinar. He told someone else to take care of her, and he moved away. So this is a Rambam, this mechaber. The Ravid asks a kashya, and it's brought in Taz Yodalad. The Ravid asks, "Maman avshach, what do you mean you give it to others to take care of? If it's shaykh to take care of it, let the son take care of it. If it's not shaykh to take care of it, so what does it mean you're giving it to others to take care of? If you give, no one can take care of it, so whatever a person could do, a person could do." So there are two pshatim in this. Each pshat is probably true lahalacha. The Aruch HaShulchan says, and this is very important, because the American mentality is not this way. The Aruch HaShulchan holds that Nirulida Rambam Hachikama. He says it's talking in a case where for the parents' sake they have to do things they refuse to do. Tiyadua shemishtagoyim, people who got mishugar b'yaisa, behechrich la'isram bezikim u'bechabolim, sometimes you have to tie them up. Vaben ein b'yachalte lasis ba'atzmekein. The son can't do that. L'chei mitzav al-acheir v'hu yeh. Means there are times where a parent has to be forced to do things. Sometimes for a parent's health, a parent has to be forced to walk, to go someplace, to eat. The parent refuses to eat, they have to be forced. Now, American mentality is, if that's what the parent needs, let the child do it. That's kibbut. So saying that's not kibbut. Acherim should do it. What it means is, if the parent has to be forced against his or her will to do something, the child should withdraw and let someone else do it. And that's Darach HaShulchan's pshat in this mechaber, in this Rambam. Rav Ami saw he would have to do things and his mother would say no. So that was that's the approach. The Bach,
an obligation to have it done.
Yeah, right. But the son shouldn't do it. The Bach disagrees. The Girsai Retchen Nishtata is a Girsan in the Rambam, which the Aruch HaShulchan follows that he's a Shaita. The Bach learns Shenishtana Daita. It just means he's elderly and extreme, and it's just too much. It's just too much. You know, they call you every night to come over. And all the time to come, and they talk to you forever. It just, the son just can't do it. The son can't do it. Put the care in charge of others. He'll be able to say no at some point. The son is stuck. Very hard for the son to say no. So these are two pshatim. I assume that they're both true. I don't know that there's an argument mahalacha. Very, very difficult. I know it happened. Darach shows Lamed Beis here in the Simen. I know of two shaylis that were asked of Rav Palm. One was a mother who had one of these diseases, a mental disease, Lyolainu, who was always asking the child, cook me this, cook me that, and never ended up eating it. It went to waste. But the mother, for whatever reason, was always insecure she'll have food, and she kept on saying, cook this, cook that. Totally unreasonable. Now, not Michel Ben, Michel Av. It wasn't a waste of money on the part of a child, but it was a waste of good food. Another case where a parent was extreme and needed things fixed in the house and always said, come right now. Whatever the parent needed, come right now. He had something fixed, needed a mail answered. It was always saying, come immediately. And the child, you know, was in the middle of something. I already mentioned to you in the past that time that's not yours, you can't give your parents. If you work for someone, you can't go away from work for your own need. The person's counting on you. It's not your time, you can't do it. What about your time? So Rav Palm said he doesn't know an Eitzah. The parent says outright do it, try to beg off. But he doesn't know an Eitzah to just say no. To just say no to things that the parent wants.
Not applicable today, because if they can call you on the phone, why, if I'm in Israel and they say, I am not allowed to say no from Israel either, just because it takes 12 hours to get there.
Do you have to pick up the phone?
What?
Are you obligated to pick up the phone?
That could be, but I mean, if they ask you in the time of the phone, what's the difference about 10,000 miles away or next block?
That's what it would be, not to pick up the phone. Yeah. You mean if you're two blocks away, you could do that?
2 blocks away also. Why is that different? In his case,
so why didn't Rav Ami stay in? Why didn't Rav Ami stay in town and just move to Williamsburg? Apparently, maybe he went to Eretz Yisrael. Says he moved to Eretz Yisrael. I think it says he moved to Eretz Yisrael from Babel to Eretz Yisrael. So why didn't he just move to the town? Maybe the mother was mobile. Maybe she went to him. I don't know.
I don't see if they call you 10,000 miles away. It's the same answer.
I mean, today, there's not much of it. They have to pay a plane fare to come. What? No, one case, it's... The case was totally unreasonable. The case was, fix it now. It's better for me if you fix it now. Talk it better for me. Talk it better for the parents. Fix it now. Okay. All right. Sif Yud Aleph, Yud Hashem, next week.